him. Catch, touchdown.
Stop it. Stop it. You can't do this. You can't escape. You can't make these plays. You can't make these throws.
Jacobs cutting back. Getting to the edge. Jacobs is in for the touchdown.
I just don't remember anybody doing what this young man has done so far in the league.
It's fourth down and one.
Welcome to Fourth and One. I'm Todd Palmer, joined by Nick Jacobs. And Nick, it is Raiders week. The Chiefs are in first place in the AFC West. It is Thanksgiving, so you get to have turkey and all the fixins and whatnot. Does it get any better?
Yes, if you're on vacation, which I'm not. You will be, though. You'll be gone for a couple of days.
I will. I'm taking some time, which is why we're recording this podcast earlier in the week than normal because of the holiday, because I selfishly want to spend time with my family.
That's very hurtful. It shows that you don't care about me and the listeners as much as the people you live with and provide for.
That's an accurate statement, though, so I apologize if I hurt you with my words, but...
You should apologize to all the people that just quit listening to the podcast.
Yeah. Yes. Because I don't love them more than my children? Okay, well...
Well, you admitted it, not me.
I'm just saying, I you know, it is true. I'm sorry. I'm quite fond of my children. Look, I'm from Raytown. It's very, you know, we look after our own there. So, I mean, like the podcast listeners are a close second. It goes like my children, / wife, podcast listeners, and then, you know, coworkers.
Okay. Well, at least I'm like, you know, 71st on that list or something.
That's right. You're in the mix. You're right there in the mix. Hey, you know who else is in the mix? The Chiefs for a fourth straight AFC West title. How much does it help to have, look, Tyreek Hill hurt his hamstring in the Los Angeles Chargers game, but Andy seemed fairly optimistic on Monday that he was at least going to practice and give it a go for this week. How much of a difference does Tyreek Hill make, and do the Chiefs need him in order to be able to beat you know, the Raiders on Sunday at Arrowhead?
I don't know if they necessarily need him to beat the Raiders. They've done it before this year already, but I don't think it hurts their cause of creating a decisive victory. I think one of the bigger things that you're going to hear about it all week long, but Derek Carr is 2-9 in weather that is 50 degrees or below, and he's yet to win a game at Arrowhead Stadium. His only two wins against the Chiefs have come on Thursday Night Football.
Occasionally with an assist from the referee.
Well, but still on Thursday Night Football. So they're not playing a Thursday Night Football game this week. So that's going to work against his favor. And the Raiders, they've been playing really bad football for 2 weeks now. It's just people weren't paying attention until this Jets game and they got blown out. Then people actually paid attention to where that football team had started to get into a lull and started to become a lot more one-dimensional than people realized.
Well, I think you and I had been paying attention because I seem to recall last week talking about or asking whether we thought the Raiders were actually any good after they barely beat the winless Bengals 17-10.
Good job, Todd.
Dang right, good job, Todd. What, you can brag about yourself when you get something right, but if I say, you know, like point out that I got something right, like all I get is a sarcastic good job, Todd?
That wasn't sarcastic. I just told you good job, man.
Felt sarcastic, Nick.
Sorry. I'm sorry. I'm not gonna put a certificate on your family fridge for you.
All right. Well, how about can you just bring in like a star and put it on my desk? I'll see it Friday.
Sure. If I can find one between now and then, sure.
Oh, if you want to find one, you'll find one, Nick Jacobs. Speaking of guys who didn't play in the first meeting, though, and if you remember that game, you know, the Chiefs had an otherworldly second quarter. Patrick Mahomes projected over a whole game would have thrown for like 1,000 yards and 16 touchdowns based on that second quarter alone. But the Chiefs really struggled outside of that. It was really, in some ways... The first sign that this offense wasn't going to be quite the unstoppable juggernaut that it had been last year, you know, when they got shut out in the second half there at Oakland. What do the Chiefs need to do to be better, you know, to put together a better performance and maybe have a nice, comfortable win like the Jets had last week against Oakland? You know, the kind of win that the Chiefs really just they haven't had in a while, you know, the kind of game where, you know, they just get to sit back and you get to kind of, I mean, really maybe the Oakland game is the only one that was a comfortable win this season.
I think the Chiefs, they're going to have to be super aggressive on offense. They're going to have to be able to run the ball effectively. They're going to have to push the ball downfield, and they're going to have to be a little bit more like the Ravens were on Monday night. If they get a chance to put the dagger in, they're going to start doing it. They're going to start being more aggressive because the Ravens made a statement there on Monday Night Football, and the Patriots have been trying to make statements every chance they get. So Chiefs are going to have to start getting into that mentality offensively coming up here. Otherwise, I mean, there's going to be some cause for concern, and people are going to be antsy until they prove otherwise.
The Chiefs should win this football game, though, right? I mean, they have enough weapons on offense, and you know, Derek Carr, if he even plays, I mean, he did get benched in the Jets game, so who knows?
In all fairness, they took out half the offense at that point and decided to, you know, live to fight another day.
Yeah, but I mean, look, I mean, that's a team that's obviously coming here with a wounded psyche, and it's not playing with a lot of confidence. You know, I mean, is it going to be disappointing, I guess, if the Chiefs don't roll in this one? If, you know, if it comes down to, you know, a kick at the end, or, you know, the defense holding on for dear life, defending one last play to secure a one-score victory?
I think anybody's going to be disappointed in anything that's not a decisive victory. So, I mean, as long at the end of the day, as long as the Chiefs get the win, that's half the battle. It's just a matter of how they approach it and how they do it. If it's a struggle like it was in the Chargers game, then people are still going to be concerned. But if they find a way to be more effective and be more like they were last year, then I think people will give them a little bit of breathing room.
What have you seen that's different from this Raiders team from early in the season? Because obviously this was, you know, the Raiders up until the last couple weeks had been playing better football than we'd seen the first year and a half of the John Gruden era. What had you seen from them that maybe was a little bit impressive and or potentially concerning for the Chiefs? And what do you think that they, you know, Patrick Mahomes and company can do to counter that, especially on defense?
Well, I mean, what the Raiders were doing is they were on offense. They were able to run the ball more effectively with Jacobs and put him in favorable down and distance, so Carr could kind of convert more of a Alex Smith style of offense. So they were allowing him to be in his comfort zone. But whenever teams take away Jacobs like they have in the past couple of weeks and kind of neutralize the run game and kind of forced him to go to either you know, have to pass the ball and hold on to it a little bit more, they've been able to pressure him and make him uncomfortable, which the Chiefs were able to do that in the second half of their game in Oakland. So, I mean, there's ways to attack him, and it's there for the taking. It's just a matter of the Chiefs, especially when they play Carr and them, they need to with Hunter Renfrow likely not playing because of the broken rib and the lung issue, which is scary in itself to hear. He's their favorite. He's Carr's favorite target. So if you eliminate Jacobs in the run game, take away the favorable down and distance, start putting pressure after Carr, and try to eliminate the tight end Waller. If you can do that, then it honestly comes down to Tyrell Williams as the other key. And then at that point, you kind of take away what their offense is and what they're capable of. So I mean, there's a good chance that the Chiefs can oppose their will, especially if they take Jacobs away. That eliminates a lot of what makes the Raiders' offense effective.
Can they do that, though? I mean, you know, the Achilles heel of this defense at times this season has been stopping the run, and they've got a big, powerful offensive line. I mean, they did a good job the first matchup, but, you know, I mean, Josh Jacobs is a little bit different player probably than he was week two of his NFL career.
Here's what I'm gonna tell you: if the Jets and the Bengals can do it, the Chiefs can do it. So, I mean, both teams are willing to dedicate seven to eight to take away Jacobs on first and second downs, and to leave him in longer third down and distance. So, I mean, it's there for the taking, and the reason Carr was able to be effective and put up 10 points on the Chiefs last time is because he was a little bit more confident in some of those tighter windows and making the throws that he did. And that's what kind of helped them out early on. But they did struggle with Jacobs to a certain extent. He had one big run against the Chiefs where they missed a gap, filling a gap. So they were able to keep him in check the last time, and I think they can again. And Carr just really doesn't have the same zip on the football that he did earlier in the year, and a lot of that I think has to do with some of the cold weather. He's not as effective as a quarterback when it's colder out. So the Chiefs, it's there for the taking. The defense is capable of making this a bigger win than the last one was. It's just a matter of if they have that fire from the start to finish.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the defense and what it's going to take for them to win on Sunday here on 4th and 1.
Home of the Chiefs. You give the kingdom what they want. Shows that go inside the locker room and get up close and personal. Any closer, and you'd need a helmet and a chin strap. Exclusive insight from the man who bleeds Chiefs red. A weekly podcast that's second to none. And starting next year, the preseason games play here. 41 Action News, Kansas City's home of the Chiefs.
Welcome back to 4th and 1. I'm Todd Palmer, joined by Nick Jacobs. Nick, are we ever going to get you in studio to have a conversation face to face again?
I don't know. I got a lot of vacation coming up, Todd. So I mean, it's a coin toss at this point.
Can I get a commitment from you to come in on Sunday?
I mean, I'm technically working on Sunday, so I mean, I will be here.
I'm going to take that as a yes. Can I also, it'll be a while since we've seen each other. Can I get a hug?
No, okay. That is always off the table.
Well, I tried. Not even in the holiday spirit, I see. Look, Frank Clark's coming off his best game of the season, but there's still, that's a banged-up defensive line. How concerned are you about the depth, about that defensive line wearing down? Obviously at this point in the season, there's not a whole lot you can do. You can't make any trades. You can't, it's harder to add players this time of year. So what do the Chiefs need to do to keep those guys fresh and to give themselves a chance moving forward against Oakland, against New England, against Denver, and perhaps looking on to the playoffs?
They need to run the ball effectively on offense, convert on offense, keep the offense on the field. And then they got to get off the field and make some third and shorts and get off the field. They're able to do that. I mean, they don't have to worry about as much of the time of possession and can go from there.
How much is there a role that, whether it's linebackers or whether it's the way that Spagnuolo schemes it up, then he can take some pressure off those guys? Or are you just hoping that Alex Okafor gets healthy and can help out at some point?
Yeah, you're hoping Okafor gets healthy. You're hoping Harris can kind of contribute here in the coming weeks, and that's kind of going to be primarily the way you're going to have to do it, and you just got to hope nobody else gets injured. And then if you do, then you're going to start to have a problem, especially Joey Ivey getting signed by the Titans onto their practice squad. You've lost that rotational guy as well. So, I mean, they're going to have to figure out a way to make it work, unfortunately.
We talked about Jacobs, he's one of the better rookie running backs in the league. He can do a lot of things in the passing game. In what ways do you see them trying to use him? Because we know that he can be a threat in the passing game. Have they kind of evolved his role in that respect? Can they take advantage of the Chiefs linebackers in the way that Green Bay did with Arizona or things like that? Or are Jacobs and Carr still not quite there yet?
They really don't use Jacobs. From what I've watched in the recent weeks, they really don't use them. And a lot of screens, they don't really use him in the flats. They kind of use Rashard more for that, to kind of throw to him out of the flats. Now, this will be the week that if the Raiders are going to do it, it'd be something I would definitely prepare for, to account for Jacobs potentially being a receiver, because I think that's where Oakland could have the biggest threat with him. And also with Hunter Renfrow gone, they're going to have to figure out a way to match and create the loss in production if he's not able to play. So that may be one of the ways that they're going to have to do it. And the Chiefs have been trying to counter by using Daniel Sorensen against some of the running backs out of the backfield. So that'll be one of those potential opportunities the Chiefs may try.
I mean, you know, we saw the good and the bad of that in recent weeks using Sorensen. Obviously, you know, the interception he makes defending Eckler out of the backfield to seal the game on Monday night before the bye week is on the positive side. But, you know, the way the Titans ran the ball down the Chiefs' throat with Derrick Henry the week before that is kind of the drawback of having Sorensen in there. I mean, is it an either-or proposition right now for Spagnuolo? Does he have to pick one, pick the other, and just ride with the consequences? Or do you think that they're figuring out, you know, time situation, and that there can be a little bit more nuance to how they, you know, how they use Sorensen or don't use him moving forward?
I think it's an either or situation based on the personnel you got. You're gonna have to live with some of the consequences this year, and you honestly really won't be able to evolve until next year. I know people are gonna say, well, they got Roy Daniel on the roster. Yeah, well, he hadn't exactly done anything to clearly instill confidence in the coaching staff that he's the guy that they have to have on the field other than on special teams. So until Dorian O'Daniel can be one of those guys, you're going to have to roll with Sorensen, and unfortunately there may be some consequences from it. You may have to take some lumps here and there, but, I mean, that's just the reality of it.
What have you seen from the secondary? And I mean, obviously the Raiders don't have one of the better, receiving groups that you're going to go up against. Certainly, I don't even think they're not as good as the Chargers group led by Keenan Allen and stuff like that. So is there anyone that worries you? And, you know, there was so much emphasis on the secondary in the off season. Are they less of a concern now than maybe you thought they would be at this point in the season?
I don't think they're the biggest problem overall. I think it's kind of it just depends on if there's a new team that exposes something that we aren't thinking of or haven't seen yet. Because I mean, right now it's come in waves where the secondary was an issue early on, and then it turned into the run defense was struggling throughout the entire season. Now they've kind of righted the ship on those two things, and then now it's kind of been like, well, when the backers get isolated against running backs, then that becomes the problem. So, I mean, the problems constantly evolve throughout the season, and the Chiefs have had to find answers, and they found answers with the secondary early on, and they found some answers with the pass rush, and the team's been able to gel and get comfortable in the scheme and the system. So, I mean, they've done what they've had to, so we'll see where things go down the road here.
All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll be back here on 4th and 1.
Home of the Chiefs. You give the kingdom what they want. Shows that go inside the locker room and get up close and personal. Any closer, then you need a helmet and a chin strap. Exclusive insight from the man who bleeds Chiefs red. A weekly podcast that's second to none. And starting next year, the preseason games play here. 41 Action News, Kansas City's home of the Chiefs.
Welcome back to 4th and 1. I'm Todd Palmer, joined by Nick Jacobs. And Nick, I want to, you know, look, I mean, this game, you know, we thought that this was basically going to be the AFC West Championship game in some respects, because you thought the Raiders were going to be 7-4, just like the Chiefs would be coming into this one. The Jets loss, you know, did a big favor for the Chiefs, who now have a little bit of breathing room. But this game, I mean, effectively the Chiefs can kind of salt away the AFC West with the win. Is that fair to say that if the Chiefs win, the race is over?
I don't think anything's over until it's over. I know that sounds awful of me to say, cliche, but the Chiefs haven't really instilled confidence in me that they can just walk away with things like I felt at times last year and early on in the season. So, I mean, it would help them a great deal to kind of have a little bit more comfortable footing for a playoff spot, and then you kind of see what happens in New England, and then if you take care of Denver, then I think you're in a really comfortable situation at that point, but I'm still hesitant to commit to anything.
Well, effectively, if the Chiefs win and move to 8-4 and the Raiders slide back to 6-6, the Chiefs would have a three-game lead, essentially, because of the tiebreaker with four games to play. I kind of believe that's insurmountable because I think the Chiefs are going to – all the Chiefs had to do was split the last four games, you know, of the season, and the Raiders wouldn't be able to catch up with them. So I really do think that the Chiefs win this one. I think it's a signal they're going to be in the playoffs. Now, whether they're the three or the four seed at that point would still be, you know, remain to be seen. You know, and there's a, you know, obviously, who, you know, injuries, there's a lot of other factors that could come into play. But do you feel like it's a foregone? I mean, you, obviously, you don't feel like it's a foregone conclusion the Chiefs are going to be in the playoffs. But if they are, I mean, what would you like to see them do, whether it's this week, whether it's the week after at New England, to make you feel like this is a team that ultimately can compete with New England or Baltimore, who's probably playing the best football of anybody in the NFL right now, come, you know, the playoffs in January?
They're going to have to be more effective on offense. They're going to have to be able to run the ball better than what they do now, because that's actually kind of the weakness for the Ravens and for the Patriots, is teams can run the ball on them effectively if they're efficient on offense. So, I mean, that could be a problem for the – that could be a way for the Chiefs to be able to match them in some regard if they can figure out a way to continue to work on it and be more effective. That's one way. And then they're going to have to – offense is going to have to sustain more drives. They're going to be more aggressive and attack more. I mean, that's just kind of the reality of where it's at. And the Chiefs' offense hasn't been as efficient as it needs to be, and it's going to be better in the red zone like we talked about in the previous podcast. I mean, they can't keep kicking field goals. I mean, because the Ravens tried to put everybody on notice in that Monday Night Football game, and then going forward on that fourth down, that was a deliberate message sent to the rest of the AFC. And that was to get into every single other AFC team's psyche right there. That was them trying to do that. So now they're waiting to see, are the Patriots going to answer in their game? Are the Chiefs going to answer in their game? And that's what kind of the race is at this point in the playoffs, is each team's got to start making its statement to every opponent on tape about what you should get prepared for in the playoffs mentally. And so you got to start psyching out other teams. And that was the Ravens' way of trying to do that last night to the Chiefs, the Patriots, the Bills, and the potential Steelers, and anybody else that's going to be involved. And defensively, the Chiefs are going to have to continue to attack. They're going to continue to set the tempo. They're going to continue to have to show that they can stop the run. They're going to have to start getting after the quarterback a little bit more aggressively than they have. So they have a lot of things on their checklist to start marking off. But above all else, the Chiefs defensively need to figure out a way to start forcing more turnovers. If they can do all those things, and I feel a lot more comfortable with where they're headed.
The Ravens are the team to beat in the AFC now, right? I mean, I know that the road to the playoffs may still end up ultimately going through Foxborough, but the way they're playing right now, if the playoffs started today, they're the team to beat, right? In the AFC, at least.
Well, I would say when you're looking at it overall, when you look at the Patriots, they've got an awesome secondary. They have a really awesome secondary that they built in the offseason to be able to counter the Chiefs. That was kind of their purpose, because they thought they would be the team that they would have to deal with. And what the Patriots are finding out now is that the Ravens are a serious contender too, because of the ability of Lamar Jackson, how effective he is in the run and how much problems he causes. And it allows that run game to thrive behind that offensive line. So, and the Patriots are actually, they're struggling in run defense right now, and that's why the Ravens kind of did what they were able to against the Patriots a handful of weeks ago on Sunday night. And that's kind of where the Patriots probably are kind of having to reevaluate some things as they play them down the road, whether it's divisional, AFC championship, if they face them. Then that's kind of what Bill Belichick's working on behind the scenes in that regard, is how do they slow down Lamar Jackson. I mean, in the current situation and circumstance, yes, the Ravens have gotten better on defense. They're becoming much more efficient on offense right now, and it'll be interesting to see what they do against the 49ers and the Bills. That'll answer a lot about where the Ravens are at. But above all else, I mean, Lamar Jackson's got to stay healthy. He's the key to that offense. Him staying healthy is what's going to decide what the Ravens can or can't do. And one thing I'll say to people is there's only so many hits a player can take before their body just can't deal with it anymore. So it happened to RG3. It's happened to every mobile quarterback, and that's kind of that's kind of where I'm worried for Lamar in that regard, to where, I mean, each time he gets exposed, it's going to happen. And James Harrison brought up a really good point on Fox today. Whenever he said what Dick LeBeau taught him a long time ago, if they're going to run that read option stuff, the quarterback isn't protected anymore, and they would have hit him on every single play. So yeah. I think that's something come playoff time a team's going to do if the Bills don't do it first, or if the Niners don't do it first. And then they're going to test out Lamar Jackson's toughness, and that's why the Ravens are going to need a bye week if a team starts doing that relentlessly before they get into the end of the playoffs. So, I mean, that's kind of, you know, there's only so many hits each player can take before they start to lose what makes them dynamic and what makes them a really good athlete. And nobody really knows the number. It's just something that you just notice over time. And for RG3, it wasn't very long. And for Dexter McCluster, I mean, he was really shifty and had good shake for the Chiefs, but there was only so many hits he was able to take, and then he lost some of that. And there's only so many hits Jamal was able to take before, you know, his knee gave out and he lost some of his dynamic ability. It's just every player has I know it sounds bad of me to say it in this way, but each player has a shelf life in the league, and you don't know when that time is up, and it can happen at any moment. So that's why you just got to take advantage of the opportunity when you have it. But, I mean, that's where when you're looking at the long-term career of Patrick versus Lamar, I mean, the one who can become the better pocket passer is going to have a lot more time in the NFL. I mean, look what Brady was able to do and how long it took him to finally, you know, look like an average quarterback, which is what's happening this year. He finally looks 42.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, he still looks better than I do, and I'm only 41. So,
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're comparing it to a gentleman who works on the digital desk versus a professional athlete, then yes.
I'm just saying, I am younger than Tom Brady. That's all I'm saying. And prettier, if we're being honest.
All I know is people comment on a regular basis on Twitter about how you look like Jack Del Rio.
I've missed that, but if that's the case, Jack is a handsome man and his wife is very lucky. So,
like somebody said on Twitter the other day, they're like, what's Jack Del Rio doing wearing a suit on your podcast?
I missed that one. That's awesome. I got on a shirt and tie again today. Yeah, I mean, you and I have talked about this one privately, though. You know, when you talk about mobile quarterbacks, you know, you go all the way back to whether it's Randall Cunningham, whether it's Michael Vick, you know, whether it's guys, you know, like you mentioned, RG3. There's really a 5 to 6 year peak, right? And then, you know, they just, whether it's because they slow down a step or they have catastrophic injuries, like, you know, like Robert, RG3 had, you know, the ankle issues. You know, obviously, it would have been interesting to see how Michael Vick would have held up if his career hadn't been interrupted, you know, by legal proceedings.
Honestly, but having that time off kind of helped his body heal back up.
No, it may have extended his career. It may have given him that renaissance in Philadelphia because he did have some time where he wasn't taking the pounding that you do at the position. You know, I think that's fair. I mean, I think that's fair for anybody. I mean, I think it's fair that I think Le'Veon Bell's better this year than he was last year because he took a year off from that beating. You know, and we talked about how guys used to take 3 to 4 months off once the offseason hit to give their body that time to recuperate. Now they don't, and that may play a role in some of the issues that you see with guys and recurring injuries and stuff like that. You know, but I'm wondering, I do think it's worth pointing out, I think the one guy who's bucked that trend at least a little bit is Russell Wilson, because he's a fairly mobile guy, but he's in year 8 and he's done a better job. But he's a guy who's always been a pocket passer first, who can run, and I think he's just better at it than Aaron Rodgers or Alex Smith or even Patrick Mahomes. So I would put him among the elite mobile quarterbacks, but he's not a running quarterback exactly, if you understand that distinction.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. Russell Wilson's kind of the exception but I mean, it comes down when you ask yourself how many mobile quarterbacks, or, you know, how many quarterbacks that expose themselves to shots on a regular basis, how many of them were able to withstand the test of time. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger, that guy gets beaten like a human pinata sometimes over the years, and he's still been able to to get to the to play as long as he has. And Rivers taking a lot of shots over the years as a pocket passer. And so it just, I mean, some guys, I mean, it just, it's the testament of time for some of those guys. But overall, I mean, like, yeah, Russell's kind of one, what I consider one of the exceptions to where he's been able to keep his athletic ability despite being able to maneuver around and run. And he's been really smart about it. So it's, You want to see guys like Russell Wilson play on a weekly basis, you know. So I mean, you enjoy being able to watch that athletic ability and marvel at it, and you want to see as many quarterbacks as possible do that. That's why with Lamar Jackson, when he's not playing the Chiefs, I enjoy kind of being able to watch his game and watch what he's able to do and watch his growth and development. And I want to continue to be able to see that down the road. But last night, Monday night, when I was watching the game, there were times where like, why is he still in this game right now? Like,
yeah.
You know, like, are you trying to win a Super Bowl? Are you trying to send a message to the rest of the AFC? I mean, there comes a point when, you know, you got to decide. And each time, whenever it in my head mentally I was thinking that, I'm like, okay. And each time he started taking a bigger and bigger hit, whenever they kept running, I'm like, all right, you guys keep playing with fire. You're going to get burned for too long.
Yeah, and, you know, yeah, we'll see. I mean, I agree with you. I enjoy watching Lamar Jackson play. I'm not wishing that his career take a nosedive. I just think there's an inevitability to it when you play the style that he does, that you can't keep that up as long as a Tom Brady or a Phillip Rivers or some of those other guys who aren't quite exposed as much. But I also think that, you know, Lamar Jackson's evolving. If he can learn to become a pocket passer and can maintain that, you know, maintain that athleticism the way Russell Wilson has and kind of extend that to an 8, 10, 12 year window. Oh boy. I mean, the Ravens, in the matchup with them, I mean, just think about the AFC. If Deshaun Watson can stay healthy, if Patrick Mahomes can stay healthy, if Lamar Jackson can stay healthy, and those guys can all keep playing at the level they're playing at, and the battles that are going to be waged coming up here. I know that people are worried about the next, I think a few years ago, we're worried about the next generation of NFL quarterbacks, because you really only had Russell Wilson as that bridge between the Roethlisbergers, the Eli Mannings, the Tom Bradys, even if you want to throw Peyton Manning in that group. And I think we're seeing what that next evolution is going to be.
So I mean, essentially, what we're kind of happening,
and I think I should say you got to throw Kyler Murray in that group too. Potentially, it'll be interesting to see how his career develops, especially given his stature relative to some of the other guys.
Well, I'd say for right now, in terms of the AFC, yeah, you're kind of seeing that next mantle, and that's where the Texans are going to have to improve their offensive line so he can be a part of that conversation for a while. You're going to have Lamar Jackson, potentially Patrick Mahomes, and Deshaun Watson. And that's going to be the equivalent of replacing Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, and Ben Roethlisberger that we've seen during that span from an AFC perspective. So those are kind of your guys that are potentially going to replace that in some regard you're talking about that next wave. So that's where, I mean, each one of those teams, the Ravens already have it, but the Chiefs are and the Texans are going to have to assess their offensive lines for the long term to make sure each one of those guys can sustain that long-term success, since there's other quarterbacks in that conference that they're going to be competing with for title.
All right, let's circle back real quick. Final thoughts on the Chiefs Raiders and maybe a score prediction.
For the Chiefs Raiders, I think above all else, I mean, the Chiefs had a week off. They were able to rest up. I expect them to look fresh, and I would prefer if they look crisp out of their bye week and came out with a strong fire and sustained passion for four quarters. So that's kind of what I'm kind of looking for and hoping for. And I want to see a dominant run defense. I want to see a better run game. I want to see the Chiefs be able to be aggressive and push the ball downfield. I want to see a lot of touchdowns, Todd, a lot of touchdowns from the Chiefs, not the Raiders. I just want to see them put the Raiders out of this game. And I want to see them kind of dominate from start to finish. And I want to feel like that game never had any doubt in it. I mean, I know that's a lofty expectation on my part, but, I mean, they created lofty expectations when we went to the AFC Championship last year. So at some point, you're going to have to start living up to them.
Well, and look, Andy is a masterful coming off bye, so you would expect something in the range of 76-0 this week against the Raiders.
you and your score predictions would break the NFL scoring record, man. Oh my God.
Reminder, guys, the game was flexed to the game of the week at 3:25. It's not noon. If you have a pocket schedule, you know, the time has been changed. So don't be looking for it at noon, right?
So is the time not yours now? The time is CBS's?
The time is some. I mean, look, the time is yours up until 3:25. You get a little extra time to get the honey-do list done before Chiefs kickoff this week.
Luckily, I don't have that. I just have to show up to work at, 2 o'clock.
My wife can give you a honey-do list if you want one.
I don't think Angie is going to do that to me. I think she likes me too much.
I will have her text you. I think you're going to be surprised.
I don't think she would be. I don't think she'd believe you, even if you told her.
All right. Well, we'll update you guys on that situation Sunday when we discuss whether the Chiefs have a stranglehold on the AFC West or whether we're, angry and breaking things.
I will never break
things. I'm sorry. Not breaking. Angry and destroying Wendy's.
Okay, that's better, but there's not a Wendy's nearby, so I'd have to wait till after my
show. If the Chiefs lose to the Raiders, I am bringing in a sack full of Wendy's, and you and I are just going to eat our feelings on the podcast on Sunday. So you have that to look.
Now you're a person that eats their feelings.
Oh, well, okay. I mean, I can be. Yeah, I'll join you. And I joined our desk guy, Steve Kaut. I mean. It was really, he likes to dress up when fancy folk are coming, whether if we know that the mayor's coming for an interview at the building, Steve Kaut on the desk likes to, put in a little extra effort, and so I decided this week I didn't want him to be alone. That's why I've been in a shirt and tie. It just also happens that we've recorded podcasts on those days. I'm a joiner, Nick. I'm a joiner. So I will help you eat your feelings if they lose to the Raiders, okay?
Well, hopefully we don't have to tackle that idea.
All right. Only time will tell, sir. Hey, you guys have a happy Thanksgiving. Sorry we didn't get a chance to check your tweets this week, but go ahead and send all complaints to @Jacob71. There's nothing he'd like more for the holidays.
Yeah, I've already had a lot of Mecole Hardman and Eric Berry in my mentions, so yeah. let's just keep it going from there. That's great. That'll be the gift to me on the shopping weekend after Thanksgiving is over. And also, if you're listening to this before it's happened, don't forget to check out the Plaza Lighting.
Oh yeah,
news starting at 6 o'clock. You can watch it there, and they had it online last year, and I don't remember if it was on the Roku or not, but I do know.
Oh, if it's on our air, it's on. It's over the top. You can check it out on the 41 Action News channel on. Yeah, on Roku, on wherever you find your broadcast.
That's right. So, see, Todd, apply the lighting. So, but if it is after, Thanksgiving, and you're listening to this, then I hope you enjoyed the clips that we put on the interwebs at that point.
There you go. Oh yeah, no, it'll be yeah, yeah. I love the Plaza lights. You know what I like even more? Wins.
Oh, okay.
Stacking up wins. That's what I like you more.
I never actually know if you wear what direction you're going to head. I mean, you could literally go 12 different directions. I never know.
All right. Well, if the Chiefs win, I'll try to record. I'll try to have a special open prepared for next week. How's that?
I'm already concerned already.
You should be. All right, kids. Have a safe and happy Thanksgiving, especially if you're traveling out there.
All right. Time's yours.